And it's health chats.
Health chatty time.
Yeah. Okay. What have we got this week, Benta?
Well, we suffered our community.
Sounds good to me. Way we go.
Last week. So what you do, there's sort of a few little things to it. So first you stand with your feet nicely beside each other and just try and stand still for 10 seconds without falling over. That most of us can usually do that. Then the next thing you do is that you move your one of your feet in front of the other just enough sort of halfway so your toes fit in underneath the arch of the foot as forward.
Yeah.
And you still have your feet right beside each other. And then you try and just stand like that for 10 seconds.
Right.
And then you can then put your front foot right in front of the other foot, so heel to toe. And then again, stand there with your legs in front of each other and balance for 10 seconds. And if you're doing really fine with all of that, you can try and lift one leg and stand on one leg and see how you go with that. And if you're doing fine with all of that, like I would always say, if you're unsure on your balance, do have something close by to hang on to. You can try and do it with closed eyes. You will find that your balance is a lot worse when you haven't got something to look at and help guide you in your balance.
Okay.
So it's worth doing just in general a little exercise every day to help your balance and keep your balance going.
So feet together, one foot under the instep of the other, then
yep.
heel toe,
yep.
then stand on one leg,
yep.
and then try doing that with your eyes shut.
Yeah, and like just for about 10 seconds for each position.
10 seconds.
Yeah.
And what happens if you do have difficulty?
It may help you train a little bit in order to do keep your balance,
right.
because you do train those muscles that's involved.
Okay.
So that's worth doing. And another easy little exercise is just to, like, without holding on to something, have your arms in front of you, sit down on a chair and then stand up and down just 5 times. That's just to help strengthen your legs and for you to be able to get up and out of a chair without having something to drag on or hang on to.
Okay, so you're really doing an exercise.
Well, I would call it movement. Just keep
at
the body
my age,
moving.
It's exercise.
No, it shouldn't be exercise for you. This should just be movement of the day. Anyway, worth considering. So what I was thinking is was to talk a little bit about dizziness, a more specific vertigo, which can have a really broad range of causes.
Okay.
And what can cause that. So it's really important if you feel you're dizzy, don't just tell your doctor you're dizzy. It's the same as asking the doctor how long is a piece of string, because dizzy can be caused by a whole raft of things. So what you need to pay attention to is, first of all, when does it happen? Like time of the day, is the specific time of the day you get dizzy? Is it on movement? Is it on standing? Does it just happen randomly when you sit down or when you're at rest? So we need to know when this dizziness happened to figure out what the causes are.
Okay.
So that's what I would really say. If there's going to be a takeaway from today, it is write down what it is you're experiencing if you do get dizzy, in order for your doctor to be able to find out what the cause is. Because if you just say I'm dizzy, it can have such a big range of issues.
Okay.
So it's not a simple symptom. They're just points in one direction.
So you need to write down a description of how
yeah.
you feel dizzy.
Yeah.
The time of day it happens,
yeah.
so you look for a pattern.
Yep.
Okay.
So it's good to write it down over a week, or does it just happen randomly every now and then? Like that's a pattern too.
Mm-hmm.
So we just need to have some idea about what's going on. Has it recently started, or has it been going on for a long period of time? So all those things are important.
Okay.
Also, if your hearing are affected, is actually quite important.
If you're dizzy and your hearing's affected?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that sort of something to do with inner ear infection or motion?
It can more do have something to do with your motion center or that area in your ear
yeah.
that has to do with balance.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
Yeah. So if there's either swellings or little grains of something floating around, then they can all have effect on when and how you feel dizzy, whether it's more what we call vertigo. So all those little things would be really important to be aware of. But in order to distinguish figuring out what is what, we need to have more information than just I get dizzy.
Okay.
We need to know the when, the how, the what, like what happens for you. What were you doing when it happened?
Yeah.
And God forbid, did you fall over? So.
Yeah, it brings up an interesting point, doesn't it, Benta, that
yeah.
that you know, we rely on the doctor asking us questions about what is happening to us or how we might feel.
Yeah.
But we're really relying on a memory of something that may have happened the day before,
yeah,
or whatever. Writing it down makes a lot of sense.
Well, I think it makes a lot of sense because I know we all know when we get to the doctor, we can't remember half the things we wanted to tell them.
That's right.
So that's why having it written down is so important, and particularly if you have something like that, you're constantly experiencing dizziness, like write down, because when you then get to the doctor, they can already have something to work with.
Right.
Instead of then you're saying, okay, go down and start writing it all down.
All right, that's very sensible, I think.
Yeah,
very good
so
advice.
That's sort of what we want to look a little bit around. So be a little bit more clear what your experience is like. Are you unsteady? Do you get giddy, lightheaded? Do you lose sort of like equilibrium? Can you keep your balance? Are you tired? Is actually important too. So that can affect it too. Do you feel heavy in your head, or do you feel like you're even floating? Like, there can be all sorts of things going on. So that's really important to be aware of. So if we talk about vertigo, so that is this sensation of spinning when you're sitting down. Okay. So you're sitting down, you should be at rest, nothing should be moving, but your head's telling you that the world is turning around. That's vertigo.
Okay.
And that's sort of a more specific thing where dizziness can be caused by all sorts of other things too. Okay. But vertigo is that when you sit down, the world's spinning.
All right.
And which is quite unpleasant.
I'd think it'd be extremely unpleasant.
Yeah, or you're in a roller coaster, but it's not moving.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, that's probably a little bit overdone, but anyway. And sometimes also if you get dizzy, it can also be because you have trouble getting your balance, or you might walk with your legs a little bit further apart to try and keep your balance, but that's a completely different thing again. But what we sort of more want to look at is a little bit about this with the vertigo. So we talked about there can be things that's not related to that balance center within the ear, which is caused by other things. So that could be a whole raft of things. It could be infections. It could be blood pressure. It could be heart issues. It could be anemia. So there's a whole heap of other things there that's not related to the inner ear. But actual vertigo is related to something around the ear, one way or another, either specific for the ear or related to the central nervous system. So it's sort of trying. And that's why we need to have all this information around what is it you are experiencing.
Right.
Specifically for the doctor to figure out, what am I going to do with this? Like, yes, you're dizzy, or you say it's spinning when you're sitting down, but I need to know a little bit more about it to figure out what's happening.
All right.
So usually what you will find, if it's ear-related, it can start quite suddenly, where if it's related to the central nervous system, it's more creeping things. So you can be like a little frog in hot water and slowly get used to that the world is a bit more spinny than it used to be.
Yeah.
Usually also when it's related to the ear, it can be sort of short, frequent, where it's related to the central nervous system, it's pretty much constant.
Oh, yeah, that's a big difference, isn't
it? Yeah, so that's a huge difference. And probably something also that can be, so duration, for example, if it's related to the ear, we're talking minutes to hours in the experience. Where if related to the central nervous system, we're talking days to weeks. So again, huge differences there.
Yeah.
Okay. Usually, this is one thing that I find is important, is if it's related to the ear, you will often also experience tinnitus, so that ringing in your ear, or deafness. So that's when it's actually is happening in that balance center in your ear, where that's often is absent. If your hearing is fine and you got vertigo, it's related to something else.
Right.
So usually to the central nervous system, if it's vertigo in specifically we're talking around. So there's these things too, but that's the really important thing, is that ringing in your ears and deafness and spinning on sitting down, if they all come together, even if it's just in one ear, it's related to something happening within that balance center in your ear.
Mm-hmm.
So that's important. So then to really let the doctor know if your hearing is affected.
All right. So, that's sort of the ear side of things, but
yeah.
It can also be other things as well.
Yeah. So there can be a lot of things involved. And that's why the more you can clarify what is happening for you,
yeah,
the easier it is for the doctor to try and figure out where we're going. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and as I said, like the more we can gather of data before we get there, the easier it is for them to move forward and figure out what's going on.
All right.
Where most of us are really poor at gathering the data, we just make an appointment and rush in there and going, it's not working, doctor. And the doctor's going, okay. So there's a couple of different types of vertigo. So we have one that's sort of more related to positional, and that's usually where you can have, for whatever reason, there's some little particles that's got their way into the inner ear, into the balance center, and they can really rattle with all the little hair that holds the balance, and that's what makes things spin when you sit down. And usually if that's the case, we don't have any sort of significant hearing loss, but it's something that can be sorted out, and usually with some specific positioning that can be done. Okay. So. But it's usually done by specialists or physios, so it's not something that I'm going to try and tell people how to do at home.
No, that sounds fair enough.
We've got to have the professionals involved in that. But as I said, important for that one is that, and what you will usually experience is like you will have recurrent periods of where you have vertigo and it just lasts a minute or less. So that's this when it's benign, it's nothing sort of major, it's just those little particles rattling around causing a bit of irritation. And it can often be provoked by if you're turning your head quickly or you do something like a movement that sets it off. So it can be looking up, looking down, or when you change position or rolling over in bed. Like some people find they roll over in bed and the whole world's spinning. And that's usually when it's these little things in the ear that you have some extra particles that's causing a mess of the place.
Okay.
And some people can unfortunately get quite nauseated from it. So, but your hearing is not affected in this one.
Okay.
So again, that's why telling the doctor whether it affects your hearing or not is so important, because there's another one where you have vertigo caused by the balance center in your ears called Meniere's disease. And you really need to have this triad of you have vertigo, you have ringing in your ear, tinnitus, or hearing loss, and hearing loss. So they all have to be present in order for us to say, well, that is Meniere's. So again, that's why write it down for your doctor so they can do a good diagnosis of what's going on for you. And it is usually because there's been some swelling in the ear or something like that. And episodes are usually from 20 minutes to 12 hours. I would hate to have the 12-hour episode.
12 hours would be appalling.
Yeah, very uncomfortable, I'd say. And there is treatments that can be done for it. So there's a few medical ones available. Plus, of course, the non-medical treatments such as reducing salt, caffeine, alcohol restrictions. So there's things there too that we can do ourselves.
Okay.
Which is always nice to know that we can do something ourselves to try and manage it. Then we have all the things, as I talked about, there's not related to the whole ear thing, but where you can have things that can cause you to be dizzy. And that can be medication related, because the medication does something to your system that affects the whole dizziness or non-dizziness of things. It can also be related to the neural systems, so there's issues around there. What can be a concern is if it also is something that interfering with you when you're walking, so that you will not steady on your feet.
Okay.
So all those things can be part of it. And of course, we have something like Parkinson's, which can have dizziness attached to it, just to add to the whole problem with balancing.
Yeah.
As we talked about with the little balance exercise we talked about first, if you have visual impairment or you're going blind, that can actually affect how everything's working for you. So that's why we've got to look after our eyes. We've got to look after the whole system, really.
Yeah.
It's a bit like an old car. It's got to get maintained, even when you're young, for the younger listeners. Because if you flog it too hard to begin with, it might not last as well.
No, that's true. And we all think we're bulletproof when we're young.
Oh, yes. I think we all, and you unfortunately have to get up in your years before you realise, oh, that was not the case.
Yeah, that's true.
So, what did I say? Start to squeak when you're 40 and then it's pretty much downhill from there.
Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah. And then I thought we'll talk a little bit about restless leg and leg cramps and things like that. So, we have a lot of people who will take magnesium for leg cramps. And for a lot of people, it definitely works. I actually sat and had a look at the evidence, and the evidence is not very good. but anecdotally for many people it works, particularly if you're low in magnesium, it definitely will work. So that's sort of those leg cramps overnight or whatever it is. It can also be lack of other salts and minerals in the system. That could be why we're getting leg cramps at night. But there's also what's actually called restless leg syndrome, which I think we'll talk a little bit about. So with that, so restless leg syndrome, that's an interesting thing that happens sort of there when we're about to go to sleep and your leg starts to move. And it's usually relieved by movement. So to move it, that can help take it. For some people say they even have to get up and walk around to settle it down. And that can be quite disturbing to your sleep if it keeps reoccurring the whole night. And again, like it sort of comes into that you have, it's important for your quality of life because it's not very nice to be woken up by your legs. They're saying, okay, time to go for another walk. And it can affect your sleep. But it's mainly this uncomfortable urge to move your limbs. And it's often accompanied by this really abnormal sensation. And it's often more common in the evening or at night or when we're at rest.
Mm.
So that's that type of sort of, it's not a cramping, it's more an urge to, I need to move. So cramping and urge to move are two different things.
Yeah.
If it's just a, I just need to move, that's when we're talking restless legs, where cramping is different. And that's probably more where your magnesium supplements can come in and things like that. So,
okay.
But again, you've got to watch out for your magnesium supplements because if you're taking too much, you can get diarrhea.
Okay. Oh, boy.
So it's just something to be aware of. If you take magnesium and you have a lot of issues with a bit loose,
yep,
goes on the toilet,
yep,
just have a chat to your health professionals around your magnesium dose.
Right. You might need to halve it.
Oh, yeah. So it's just something to be a little bit aware,
okay,
of. And also when we talk restlessness, so that need to move, that these patients often has difficulty initiating and maintaining sleep because of that get up and go for a walk.
Mm.
Feeling in their legs. So. Mm. But then they also say it's not always that daytime sleepiness is related to restless legs. So you, but again, it's not very nice to have a broken sleep. So, and it's usually, it doesn't occur just in isolation. But anyway, it's definitely, it's a difficult condition and there is treatments for it, but it's sort of like you've got to make sure that you get it diagnosed properly.
Right.
And then you also have something that's called periodic limb movements in sleep. So again, you have these two slightly different things. So restless leg wants you to get up and walk around, where the limb movement is more like they just start moving on their own. Which is, yeah, interesting. So it usually can last for like half to 5 seconds, and it occurs every 20 to 40 seconds.
So oh, wow.
Yeah, so that can be quite uncomfortable. That, and I have heard of patients who had that and very uncomfortable.
Yeah, it would be.
Yeah, so that's that periodic limb movement. And it may sort of constantly wake you up, but sometimes people can also sleep through it.
Yeah.
But maybe not their partner.
Yeah, I would imagine not.
So there's a bit of an issue there. And there is some correlation between the two because up to 85 of the patient who has restless legs experience periodic limb movements. So it's usually involving the legs in most cases.
All right.
So there's things there that hangs together. And again, there can be a lot of issues for all this. But what we also need to make sure is if we have restless, if we have this periodic limb movement, but no restless legs, so we don't have an urge to go up and walk around, we just have restless legs. Like there can be other reasons for that, and that can be sleep apnea. So if you think you could have sleep apnea, it's often if you're like tired in the morning and that, like I strongly recommend to have that assessed if there's sleep apnea involved, because like we have a set of machinery that can deal with it and that can help you sleep better. So.
I can testify to that.
Yeah, yeah. No, it is quite amazing what it can do to get proper oxygen through the inner airways.
So. Oh, you know, in an extreme case, and I experienced this, you wake up gasping for air.
Yeah.
You're literally not breathing.
No.
And The machines certainly do work.
Yeah, no, so I would definitely recommend if you are uncertain whether that could be part of the picture,
yeah.
Sleep apnea, get it checked out.
And the test is quite straightforward and it's painless?
Yeah, yeah. No, it's just a matter of getting it everything tied on properly. Yeah. Make sure we're right and then off we go. So all that can definitely be done. And then, of course, there is always, like, there can be a bit of genetics involved, too, in all this restless leg stuff, because up to 50% of patients, they hazard, they often have a first-degree relative who's also affected. So look around you in your family.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. And another thing that we were talking a little bit about before we started is that iron deficiency can be involved.
Yes, yes, it can.
And what I found was particularly interesting when we talk about iron deficiency, because sometimes what can happen for you is that we actually find that we have normal level, or we are within the parameters for your iron picture. So there's a few different things. So when you do an iron test, there's actually four different parameters there's measured, both your iron levels but also some other parameters that's involved in carrying iron and oxygen around in the blood and how well that's set up. Plus, of course, anemia would be another caller. Yes. But you can have iron deficiency without anemia, and it's sort of look right, but if you have other conditions that increases your iron need or causes inflammations or things like that, it might push some of the parameters up in normal, but they're not.
Okay.
So this is when it starts to get really complicated, because it looks normal, but it's not. Because what happens for some people is that their pictures within normal parameters, maybe a little bit to the low end, but that has resulted in that for whatever reason, the body can't send enough iron into the central nervous system to work properly and to distribute things around, which then results in that you actually have a normal picture in the outer system, but not enough in the central nervous system. And you may need some iron supplements of some description. So it's just some interesting research that's come out in recent years. And I was quite fascinated by it, because now I'm, of course, going to start going through and looking at people and going, is there something I have missed?
Yeah, that's quite interesting, because it's really with the delivery of the iron.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not necessarily the lack of it. It's just not getting.
Yeah, it's not getting. And that's why we need to bump up the levels in order to get it up higher towards the high end of normal to actually get it where we need it.
Where we need it.
And that's what makes it really tricky, because there's so many different parameters. Particularly as a doctor, you've got to look at in the patients to pick this one up, because you will go, well, it looks normal, so I can't. No, it shouldn't be the iron.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shouldn't be, but
it could be.
It could be. So, and that's for something that really only has come out in the last 12 months.
So it's very recent research.
It's very recent research in this one. And also, again, if you are going to have iron supplements, sometimes, and this is, again, some of the newer stuff that's come out, sometimes less is more. Because we all know taking iron tablets, like, you get constipation, black tarry stools, and it got to remember to take the blessed things too. And yep. Sometimes you just don't want to take them because they don't make you feel very nice taking iron tablets.
Right.
And that's where I would say try and take them every second day. It reduces the amount of side effects you get, and your body might be better just to work with that every second day dose and still be able to drag as much in as it needs or can, just instead of having it every, so even if you took two tablets, so one on day one and day two, or you just took one on day one, the amount of iron the body could handle drawing in for the two and the one tablet would be the same.
Okay, because, So that's really that each of us is unique.
Yeah, and for some people they would need it every day, but for many people maybe every second day would work better for them. And that's, again, like, I can't tell listeners you are going to just do it every second day, because you're each unique, you each have different needs, and I can't tell you on radio where you fit into the picture.
Yeah.
And that, again, is something that you should always discuss with your doctor what would be the best choice for you.
Yeah, well, we keep coming back to that, don't we, that the more information you can give your GP, the better off you are.
Yep, definitely. So that's sort of just some of the things that I was really fascinated by that I've learned and I thought would be a good little thing to share with our listeners to understand around these things. And the last thing we sort of just can throw in around these restless leg is that if it starts quite early in your life, so that's that period where you want to move your limbs and there's no apparent reason for it.
Yeah.
if it starts before the sort of around age 45, that's often when they start talking about it could be genetic. So that's why we look around on our family. But it's usually quite slow. The symptoms are quite mild, and it's usually iron is not as involved in this one. It's more related probably to the genetic makeup.
Right.
But the ones that starts with no family history after 45, with a rapid progression of symptoms with age, that's when we're starting to look at sort of like the late onset. That's where we're particularly looking at as iron as being part of the issue, plus also renal disease, like if your kidneys are not functioning as well as they used to. Yeah. So, and that's, again, it's important for listeners to remember, and I think I've said this before, having kidney disease have nothing to do how well you can go to the toilet. It's got something to do with how well your filter works, and that is a blood test from the doctor.
Okay. Well, we've covered a lot of ground, Benta. Thank you.
So that should just keep us going for another month.
Another month, and we'll be back in a month with more health chat.
Very good.
Thank you, Benta.
See you, Rod.